Hi, this is Justin Trudeau. You're listening to CFIU 93.3 Guelph Campus Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. I am pre-recording an intro to our pre-recorded episode, so Scotty Hertz is not here. Scotty is actually having a very busy time with his day job. Because they are leaning on his extensive expertise as a labor activist to get a new contract for their union with the university here. And so, I mean, that combined with the fact that we did 5 hours on election night, we are just putting together this, what we used to call a rerun. You know, for you kids, you may not get what the reruns are. So whereas at this point I would say something like Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news from, you know, Guelph, Ontario, around the world, and then interview local newsmakers and politicians. We're actually not, well, we are actually interviewing local politicians this week, one local politician and interviews we've already done. So as you may have heard, Lloyd Longfield was re-elected as Guelph's MP this past Monday. He'll be going back to Ottawa to join the now Liberal minority government as part of the 43rd Parliament. And we've interviewed Lloyd twice this year. We interviewed him once back in April. That was shortly after the budget was dropped. And then we interviewed him again during the campaign. And so we thought, you know, we kind of need a break this week after election night and other stuff going on. What can we do? When we thought, well, Lloyd's reelected. Actually, we came up with this idea over the weekend before Election Day. And we said, you know what? If Lloyd loses, then this could be like the tribute episode, like the farewell episode, the clip show. And if he wins, it would be a way to sort of put together these two interviews to sort of like as a place to begin as we sort of look forward to the new term in the House of Commons and look at, you know, maybe what Lloyd Longfield is going to do next and how he's going to fit in with the new Liberal caucus. And, you know, it's important. You know, he's going to be our representative for Ottawa. He's going to be a representative to Ottawa for everyone in Guelph. And we should, you know more about what he's about and what he wants to do and how he feels about what the Liberal government has done and what it might do next. So we're going to start today with the interview we did actually last week with Lloyd, right before Election Day, his candidate interview, so from last week. So that's still relatively fresh. And then after the break, we will have our customary break. We'll come back with the interview that we did with him back in April. That was just right after the budget. And also when, like, SNC was sort of blowing up. So I think it gives you a good taste for the man and his character. And we will hopefully have him back in the show in the very near future. But in the meantime, here is Lloyd Longfield from a week ago.
Well, let's get to our guest since he's sitting right here. We're pleased to welcome back Liberal candidate and incumbent MP Lloyd Longfield. Lloyd, welcome back to your home away from home on Open Sources.
Yeah, it's so good to be back. You guys...
is it good?
It is. I was saying to you off air, it's like talking to friends because it is. But then you also have to say, oh yeah, there's this microphone in front of you. So
it's all on the record.
Exactly. My life is on the record, so
yeah,
it's all good.
I get that feeling. I guess maybe let's start out with, you know, you've been doing this for 4 years. You know, what do you, looking back now, you know, how do you feel about how it's gone the last 4 years? And maybe, you know, as you're maybe looking to start maybe a second term. We don't know. Again, we're not in the prediction business.
No, but, none of us are. That's up to the good people of Guelph.
Yeah, if you could, you know, maybe look back and maybe give some advice to your younger self 4 years ago, you know, what would that look like?
I took a lot of advice. I get a lot of advice as it is, but I took a lot of advice from former MPs. And I can remember talking with Bill Weingard before he passed, and Bill had said to me, it's really the focus is on your family and how they support you. And to make sure that your family life, whatever form that is held intact is really, really important. You need a place where you can go and just be the way you were before entering public life. And Frank Valeriot's advice to me was, it's not about Ottawa, it's about Guelph. Mm-hmm. And Frank was a great Guelph champion. I took a lot of really solid advice from Frank. And Frank Main was really focused on science and investing in science. And so I got some really good advice, I think, from the other people that had served in this position. And really, I went into the history books, and I'm the 15th person that's ever served as a member of parliament in Guelph. Mm-hmm. So there aren't a lot of people you can go for help. You know, no. You are kind of out there. You know, Brenda Elliott as well. And one of the campaign workers I have, Liz Schroeder's father was a member of parliament. So I think getting advice where you can get it and really trying to discern where it's coming from. And the University of Guelph, of course, has been a real source of information for me. So my former self would have said, make sure you've got lots of smart people around you and listen to them. And I continue to do that.
I would point out too that
present company included, of course.
Oh well, thank you.
Yes, yes. Schmoozing the host.
We'll take it until that fisherman's friend contract comes in. Anyway,
so you don't have to be a fisherman to have those lozenges.
No,
they're good to know.
Yeah, they really. What's that expression in business where you upsize your business?
Scale up.
Scale up, yes. They scaled up to people who weren't fishermen.
Oh, very good, yeah. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, back to your questions. Yes,
oh my
enough
goodness.
Of this. Enough of this.
I feel necessary to point out, and you have been MP for 4 years, but mm-hmm. I mean, that is 4 out of 26 of Liberal representation in Guelph. And I am curious about your feeling on dynasties. We typically don't think of them. And this is nothing against you or nothing against Frank or Brenda along the way. But, I mean, the people of Guelph have been represented by a Liberal for almost 3 decades. It seems like...
Yeah, I'd say it's a progressive city. Mm-hmm. And the people that have represented haven't been the same people, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I said in my opening, there's been very different approaches and very different... times that people were living in, but one of the constants was to look at the road ahead and how can we do things differently, how do we improve. And really, Bill Weingard was a progressive. He was a progressive conservative before they dropped the progressive off that name for obvious reasons, which we could talk about at length. But I think the progressive factor is really where Guelph has always shone. And a lot of that comes from, you know, graduates of the university staying in Guelph. A lot of it comes from attracting people from around the world, trying to create a better life for their family. And so I think however progressive gets defined, in my world, I've always defined it as social, environmental, and economic balance. And so how do you have an economic plan that respects the environment and helps people that need support? And when I was in business, I always had goals in those three areas. And then when I became president of the Chamber of Commerce, we have real good strengths in all those areas in Guelph. Mm-hmm. And the University of Guelph has that as well as a balanced approach. They also add culture. They have the triple bottom line with a fourth bottom line in terms of culture, which is an improving life. So it's a very, I think, consistent theme. I don't think it's a cookie cutter that we need to have a Liberal, but we do need to have people with progressive ideas.
Mm-hmm. We've mentioned the university several times, and there was an event here on campus yesterday talking about the election. And one of the things that came out of it was that for a lot of young people here, young people who were maybe here during the last election, there is a feeling of disappointment in Justin Trudeau. So how can you sort of address that in terms of, you know, maybe where some young people are feeling that he didn't live up to the promise of what he campaigned on in 2015.
Yeah, there's, I would say, there's a reaction that some of which would be warranted, that things that didn't happen that we were hoping to see happen, like electoral reform, which was one of my personal disappointments. But when you see the complexity of what we were trying to achieve and how much we were trying to achieve, not only undoing work of a previous government, but also creating some space to do interesting and exciting and meaningful, important work around Indigenous people, and how do you draw them into the conversation in the right way instead of dominating the conversation? How do you listen to what they need to have to get their way on the path forward? The Prime Minister has also been pounded by conservative media. He's been pounded by, as it turns out, Russian bots with the Trudeau Must Go hashtag. Mm-hmm. So there is a global pushback against progressive governments and progressive ideals. And then you have Greta Thunberg, who's really leading a progressive movement and really wanting to see things happen more quickly. And the reality is, some of these things that we're working on, when you're trying to work through different orders of government and you're trying to change the way people think about climate change and putting a price on pollution, there's a lot of pushback from a lot of different places that we have to work through. And that does take some time. But what I've seen from working with Justin Trudeau is a very consistent person, a very caring person that holds details really, really well. And he doesn't push back a lot. He lets the conversation happen, and because he's trying to have a different style of politics, where if they say black, you can say white, and then you fight white versus black, or you say, you know, whatever it is, the other side says you have to say the opposite. And he's trying to deal with more complex way of handling problem solving that is more, I think, true to the way we need to be as a country, instead of seeing the divisiveness that we've seen down south and we've seen in previous governments. So Greta's right. The climate change is a really serious and urgent problem that we have to solve together, but we don't solve it by fighting each other. And so I did read some of the commentary from last night's discussion here. I was knocking on doors last night, so unfortunately I wasn't able to be part of it. But good to have those discussions at the university. I hope that the university, the people here that are studying or teaching are also working on critical thinking, because as we go forward, that's going to be our most important skill to have.
What do you think Trudeau has learned from the last 4 years? Because, I mean, it's more than just like promises, big promises that haven't been kept. I mean, there has been controversy, too. A lot of that comes from his missteps. So do you think he comes out of this like maybe with better leadership abilities? Or
I wouldn't try to answer his question for him, especially when I'm on air. But I think that one of the learnings that is shown up in our platform is to try to get the House of Commons into a more respectful place where we aren't screaming at each other and talking over each other, giving some power to the speaker to be able to recognize anybody in the House that wants to stand up and be heard, instead of having whips tell you when you're going to stand up and what you're going to say. So I think one of the learnings has been to look at how do we get past some of the partisanship. I think the partisanship is frankly a surprise sometimes. Mm. When I was in committee and I would see the NDP siding with the Conservatives on just about everything, I'd say to myself, how does the NDP agree with the Conservatives on everything at committee, but they don't agree on anything outside of committee? Mm. So how do you have committees working better? So I think the strength and intensity of the attack on the Prime Minister has been something that he's had to deal with, and is doing that by saying, how do we have a better dialogue? How do we have a better nonpartisan approach? And one of the successes, and I'll also say while I'm droning on, and I'll get back to you, but 92% of his promises have been kept. And that's the highest percentage in 35 years. And that isn't in the media a lot. So 92% of a lot of promises have been kept. And that has to be recognized.
Not to disagree with you, but I think that is 92% either were achieved or partially achieved.
Well, for sure. They're being worked on, but sure. fully achieved is in the 60%. And you've okay. got 4 years, 4 years, and some of them, really some of the promises that we worked on took 4 years to even get into the House of Commons.
Rome and, wasn't built in a mandate.
And some of it goes to the Senate. And one of the biggest sure. things that we did was the Prime Minister made the Senate less partisan. Mm-hmm. And so we don't know what's going to come back from the Senate and when it's going to come back because we're not whipping the Senate anymore. Mm. The Conservatives continue to be partisan in the Senate, and I'm not making a slur against Conservatives. It's just reality. You know, Denise Batters will keep going and doing what she's doing. But you do have people like Rob Black locally that is really being thoughtful and working across Canada to come up with solutions. And that does take more time. Mm-hmm. You know, on our pipeline discussion, the C-69 bill had 98 amendments we accepted from the Senate and 200 that we didn't that came from the oil lobby, but that's a whole other conversation. So it is complex. It isn't something you can just wave a magic wand and come up with the environmental bill that will cause... You know, that will balance environmental, economic, and social interests and working with Indigenous peoples at the same time. Hmm. Some of those promises, yes, are in progress, but we've had significant progress.
I've asked this to other candidates, too, who've come in and are perhaps more to the left of things who are. And you made this point that you have, on the left-hand side, parties that are fairly critical of what has been done and have not seen it as adequate. But on the other side, you have people on the right who want to repeal, you know, the greenhouse gas pricing that has already been passed. I've been wondering if, you know, if the decision comes back on Monday that either for another Liberal mandate or in a majority or a minority situation, do you think that makes it easier to sort of maybe start making connections or just to start working together more on the climate issue to maybe start pushing the goalpost a little more forward? Does this election settle the carbon tax debate, do you think?
No, I think, you know, I've been in 10 debates now. You've been at 10 debates, and thank you. Thank you for doing that. That's something that doesn't get recognized as the amount of work goes into covering debate. But you have heard the Green Party saying that it'd be good to have a private group of a cabinet of climate change people. Mm-hmm. And within that cabinet, you'd have the Conservatives and the PPC that really want to get rid of any pricing on pollution, even though it's been proven as one, the most effective way of dealing with behavior. Mm-hmm. And that comes from Nobel Prize winning economists through the United Nations. People are looking at Canada having a really good solution that is also returning money data to 10 Canadians. So if we tried to put together some kind of a coalition, if we had the coalition with the Bloc Québécois and the Conservatives, that's one scenario where we could see that legislation will get blocked. Mm. If we had a coalition with the Greens and the NDP, maybe some things could get through further, but in generally speaking, coalitions do delay implementation of ideas. So I don't think that the coalition is a panacea, but I think getting rid of partisanship is what we need to be doing. And that can be done in the House of Commons and committees, regardless of whether you have a majority government or not. In fact, I think with a majority government, you can implement change faster as long as you're consulting with people. You can get more progress done, which we've seen in the last 4 years, incredible changes that we've been able to institute in social development with Canada Child Benefit and 300,000 people out of poverty and our children out of poverty, 900,000 people out of poverty, and 1.1 million jobs created. I mean, those are really massive changes that we've been able to do under a majority government. Mm-hmm. But we still have the way we deal with the partisanship has to be addressed.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, though, and I'm not sure how to phrase it or how to look at it, but, it, you know, it does seem like there are a number of people who... are you know, dead set against the Liberal agenda, and it seems largely driven by a distaste for Justin Trudeau, justified or otherwise. But, I mean, we're all talking about the need for more bipartisanship. I'm wondering how we get there. Well, because I'm struggling with you know how vicious some of the attacks have been.
Yeah, I would say sometimes to answer the question, you have to answer the opposite question. You don't get there by having Andrew Scheer's agenda put as the agenda for the country. You don't get there by having a federal government that is reflecting the values that we see with the provincial government in Ontario or Alberta, mm-hmm. where vulnerable people are under attack and then will be under attack by the federal government as well. So when we look at student support, the federal government has some levers we can use when cuts are made to supporting students. We've got 6,100 students at the University of Guelph that currently have free tuition, and that's not available due to the conservative cuts. So we're backstopping that by putting in $4,200 of grants to try and help them get through their college or the university, and also making payback periods longer so that you don't start paying back for 2 years. And if you until you make $35,000, if you have a kid, child's born, then you've got 5 years of grace period that's added on. So we're trying to protect people against what's going on in the conservative movements across Canada. Mm-hmm. And so we aren't going to get there by having a conservative government. And really the only other alternative, and when you look at the numbers, is going to be a Liberal government of some sort. Mm. And so it's a very serious election. If the left splits up too much, the Conservatives will always have their 5.6 million votes in Canada. Mm. And the Liberals or the Progressives will have a range of votes from the Liberals' votes range from 2.8 million to 6.4 million. So we're somewhere in the 50% or 100% variance. And so it's just really important that we have a progressive government that's reelected.
You think there's some regrets about electoral reform in the caucus?
Yeah, and again, I would say the regret was the way that we approached it, thinking it was going to be a nonpartisan approach, giving up the majority in the committee and then having the Greens and NDP side with the Conservatives to advocate for a referendum, which is something we said right from the beginning. The Liberal government did not want to see a referendum because it divides. Mm-hmm. We saw Brexit. We've seen lots of examples of referendum failing. We wouldn't be able to get to electoral reform through a referendum. We knew that. You can't have a yes-no on a complex issue. Mm. And the report came back to us as members of parliament that we're going to have a referendum. We don't know whether it's mixed member or single transferable vote. We don't know the system, but we're going to have a referendum on something. You figure it out. Mm. Well, the stuff coming back from committee, and again, it was the surprise to me was at committee that parties that are not the Liberal Party will gang up on the Liberal Party. And when you give up the majority, then that's what we ended up with is a situation where we can now say that that was a promise that wasn't kept. Mm. But we spent $44 million trying to keep that promise, and unfortunately we didn't get to the goal line on it. Mm-hmm. So coming into the next parliament, I would love to see us get to a ranked ballot. I think that's something we could just do, mm-hmm. and that will give us some proportionality.
Just to go back to what you were saying about students, it makes me curious if we're maybe setting yourself or the Liberals are setting themselves up for this expectation that if you can't work through the province, even if it's a provincial jurisdiction, you can leapfrog over the province and go to the federal government to find your solution there. And I'm wondering if that sets up maybe some kind of, imbalance in terms of how our system is governance. And I understand why it's done, and I understand, you know, we have our system and it's divided a certain way and you can only do so much. But yeah. I mean, I'm wondering if we're setting up the expectation.
Well, some of the expectation would come from parties that say we're going to go straight to free tuition when that has to be worked on through the province who has jurisdiction over that and university boards of directors who's also got jurisdiction over that. So you can't just wave a magic wand and say everybody gets free tuition and then hope that the universities are going to survive. And again, dealing with the complexity, that sounds like a great solution, but it's not a practical solution. So what we're doing from our end is providing grants to people that need grants. There's others that get scholarships in other ways. They get to university and wouldn't need a grant, but have a means-tested way of supporting people that need to get to university in order to progress in their careers. So we are dealing with that from the federal level. What we're doing on infrastructure, where the province is blocking 60 electric buses for Guelph right now, is we're going through the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, and we're transferring money directly to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities so that the City of Guelph can apply to them for funding instead of the provincial government.
Hmm.
And we're finding ways to still democratically get money to a system of applying for the money. But the province is unwilling to work with the federal government, so we've had to find some solutions that that frankly go around the provincial government, but still working with municipalities directly. And I've been working with the municipality here with Mayor Guthrie, and I've been working with Mike Schreiner, who's also been a tremendous help when we're trying to find the best projects for Guelph and to get things through in the way that we can. But it's just a real shame that the provincial government has taken it on themselves to try and fight the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Even after, when you look at where it was in the Harper years, there was no consultation with the provinces, and we opened up the provincial meetings again. We brought Indigenous people to the meetings. We were having federal-provincial discussions on a number of issues, and then we got a couple of conservative governments that decided they're going to take on the federal government and not work together. So hopefully we can get back to the table with all the provincial governments, including the conservative ones, in the next parliament.
Well, taking all that and taking all the stuff you've heard, you know, door knocking and going to events, you know, if you're lucky enough to continue to be the MP, what are some of the lessons from this election that you're going to be taking back to Ottawa with you?
I think we've had a lot of success that we need to build on. You know, the Smart Cities Challenge is one that I've been personally involved with, the $10 million that the city got to create a circular food economy. They opened up their office yesterday. I was at the ribbon cutting, and the University of Guelph is there. The city is there. The federal government would be there. If I get reelected, I would be very involved with that. We need to look at possibilities and how do we implement things like a youth mental health and addiction center in Guelph. And I've been working on that with, again, the university, the Rotary Club, the Canadian Mental Health Association, with the Homewood, with the YMCA, YWCA. We have willing partners at the table, and we have partners at the table that really don't want to see success through a Liberal government. They would rather see failure and then blame a Liberal government on failure. So we need to address that reality and find our willing partners and find ways of doing things together that will make for a better community that supports everybody here.
What cabinet position do you want?
You know, I actually addressed this directly last parliament. I said to the Prime Minister in one of our meetings that I love serving Guelph in the way that I'm able to pivot between projects. I went up to the Arctic last summer and worked at the Climate Change Research Center that's run by Pierre Fogel from Guelph. And then I can go into boiled water advisories and First Nations. And then when it comes to Canada's food policy, working with the University of Guelph, and then I have such a diverse ability when I'm not I'm allowed to just be the member of parliament representing Guelph. I can work in a lot of areas that Guelph can contribute to. So I really hope I get the same job as I had last time, because I love it.
You like being a freelancer.
I'm a freelancer. Jeez, I'm sitting across the table from a couple. He said schmoozing again.
It's true.
It's true.
True enough. Is there something this election you wish that we talked about more? I mean, there's been so much silliness and fake news and stuff. But I mean, even just here in Guelph, you know, what have we missed?
I think the rights of women is something that didn't come up enough. I think, you know, we had a lot of progress, and I'm not trying to pitch what we've done and what's in our platform, but when you look at the social and economic deficit we have because women are not getting paid what men are getting paid, or women don't have the same opportunity to start businesses because banks look at them differently, how do we continue down the road of gender equality, including LGBTQ people that are dealing with their own stresses that society is putting on them when they're just trying to live their lives. The human rights that apply to Indigenous people, women and children, and LGBTQ needed to be more of a discussion. And instead of talking about human rights, which really are at the basis of anything we do as a society, as a government, how do we treat each other and how do we respect each other? How do we love each other? Mm. We didn't talk about that at all. We instead talked about blackface, and then we talked about career paths that maybe weren't what they were set out to be. It was a very divisive campaign that really was personal shots and not the bigger issues that we needed to discuss.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that came up rather directly the other night at the debate at the Basilica about abortion. Mm-hmm. And the thing that always strikes me is that we don't have an abortion clinic here. We don't have like a women's clinic that can like assist women.
No.
That, you know, that would seem to be to be like sort of section 1A of doing something. But we are running out of time.
That's a good one, though, because, yeah. I mean, women do go to Hamilton to access services. Yeah. The services are determined by the hospital boards, and that those decisions are done between physicians and their patients. And at this point, there isn't a lot of movement where it needs to be in terms of that discussion. And, and it turns into a very hyper-partisan discussion instead of what problem were you trying to solve together.
Yeah. As I said, we are running out of time, unfortunately. So if you could tell people where they can find out more info about your campaign.
For sure. LloydLongfield.ca, L-L-O-Y-D, Longfield.ca is my campaign site. And MPLongfield.ca is my Member of Parliament site. And OpenParliament.ca for anything I've ever said in the Parliament of Canada.
Open Parliament's a great site. I think that's plugging that, yeah, if you want to find out whatever your Member of Parliament is saying or doing anything.
Or tweeting.
Yeah, it's a great resource. And I'm glad you mention it all the time. Anyway, we'll have to say good night and good luck.
Thank you,
Lloyd. And
I hope we see you on the other side.
Yes, we may very well.
We will.
So that was Lloyd Longfield from a week ago. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will hear from Lloyd Longfield 6 months ago. And we will see what he had to say then. I mean, I already know because I remember it, but, you know, you guys remember. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, come back with more Lloyd. You're listening to Open Source as Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Je me devançais à trouver le coupable. Puisqu'il y a sève, il y a sûrement mes chats. Et j'ai le monstre de femme qui me dévore. Et le suis dans sa cage. Je le tue dans sa cage.
Lloyd Longfield, thank you for popping by today on this beautiful Friday.
Yeah, we've got spring in Guelph. You've got to love it. And here we are in the studio.
We're
the windows in this place.
Deep in the UC, which was built in Soviet Russia in 1967. I want to start with breaking-ish news, because I imagine as co-chair of the Auto Caucus, you've had a busy 24 hours since Fiat Chrysler announced some cuts in Windsor.
Yeah, I've been in. Last night, I was involved with what was going on there. It was very much a surprise to the government. We didn't have the same level of engagement as we did when General Motors was going through their decisions in North America. So it did catch me off guard personally. But I was on the phone last night. On my way to a town hall up in Center Wellington, between that and a curling bond spiel with environmental engineering companies at Guelph Curling Club, we were dealing with that news as
your life is weird.
Yeah, I know. Went from curling to 1,500 job loss potentially in Chrysler, in one of our major, in fact, our largest employer in the Windsor area. And again, the Unifor Union working with that, it was a surprise to all involved. I have had some conversations later last night, and I've been keeping up with things through the course of the day, but I am in meetings today at the University of Guelph. We're doing a hackathon looking at the circular food economy. We've got a lot of students working with 10 businesses or organizations in Guelph around sustainable food supply, coming up with some solutions by 8 o'clock tonight. So it's a 12-hour hackathon I'm in the middle of. Came out for coffee break to see my buddy Adam. But it's something that I will be much more involved with over the weekend and, of course, next week up in Ottawa.
Yeah, there seems to be no firm answers. And I think it was, you said it was a surprise, and that seemed to be what the Unifort rep was getting at too. I wonder though, what's in terms of things you're hearing, what's going on in the auto sector right now? Because it seems like there's some kind of shift going when you count what happened in Windsor, what happened in Oshawa. There was everything that was being negotiated through the USMCA that, there was people would say that, we gave some concessions for dairy so we can protect auto, and that seems to be not working out in our favor at the moment. So, what are we not seeing that's going on in the auto sector right now?
Well, I think without speaking directly about Chrysler, because I'm still finding out what's going on there, but in general what's happening is the shift to electric vehicles and the shift away from the internal combustion engine is something that all manufacturers are working on. Fiat Chrysler has been working on some of this, I know, but I don't know whether that applies to the Windsor situation. Mm-hmm. So the platforms are moving towards electric vehicles. You saw in the budget that we presented last week the reinstallation of the incentive to go to electric vehicles, $5,000 for vehicles under $45,000, which gives access to the, opening of the market. The market is open for the lower value vehicles. The higher value vehicles, we're assuming that people buying those have money for them, and we're really trying to get people purchasing the entry level vehicles. And we're also looking at fleets, so that vehicle fleets for businesses now have 100% tax write down in the first year to encourage businesses to go towards the car of the future. Mm-hmm. As we move to the car of the future, of course, the car of the past becomes the question mark. And in some cases, especially with General Motors, they're freeing up capital to invest in the car of the future, which meant $6 billion had to be freed up. And they did that by closing some plants in Canada, the United States, South Korea, and a few to be named later. And maybe that's what's going on with Chrysler. But in general, the industry is shifting to the car of the future, whether it's artificial intelligence or different fuel sources. And the traditional vehicles then become question marked if they aren't making in quantity or if they aren't making money at them. Then they become subject to changes, which may be what we're seeing in Windsor.
It almost seems like it's a surprise to these automakers that this shift is going on. And I mean, it seems like they've been caught on a back foot. I mean, at least that's how it feels like when the way they explain it. It's like, oh, now we've got to move to EV. Like on a dime, it almost seems like.
No, there is the EV, but there's also volumes, and the volumes have been declining on many of the lines. The volumes in Oshawa had been declining for a number of years. They needed, I believe the number was 400,000 vehicles a year, and they were less than half that coming off the line. So it was an unprofitable part of their business. The production was good quality, good jobs. The union had done a great job there as well. But at the end of the day, the volumes weren't there as the market changes. Now, on EVs, it's less than 1% of the market. We were up close to 4% with the provincial incentives. When they got removed, we dropped back to less than 1% of new car purchases. Our goal is to get to 10% in the next 2 years. And so we think with helping through some of the programs we've introduced that we will see the market move towards 10% of new car purchases. So that's not a big swing in the market overall. It's more of a change from the sedans to SUVs and trucks, which are now 75% of the market. Mm-hmm. Now, the minivans in Windsor, again, I haven't got the analysis on that to see what's going on.
Well,
I was surprised that it happened. I was surprised along with many other people.
There are a number of people surprised.
So I just met with FCA 2 weeks ago, and that didn't come up in conversation, so that's unfortunate.
You being here today is kind of fortuitous because, we've had this news from Fiat Chrysler. Monday, the carbon tax goes into effect.
Mm-hmm.
can you talk a little about, you know, maybe what happens on Monday in terms of, like, what the mechanism, like, are we going to see something happen on Monday that, you know, will tell us the carbon tax is now in effect?
Well, one thing that we'll see is we'll see the conservatives making a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking up on my phone. I got a text from Andrew Scheer last night.
The Andrew Scheer?
Yeah, the person that's in charge of the Conservative Party of Canada texted me to say that Justin Trudeau's carbon tax was going to do terrible things to the country.
Right. And this is something that's like, it's like kind of like the new robocalls. It's a mass text.
Yeah, I thought it's funny that a Liberal member of Parliament was getting a he could talk to me across the aisle if he'd like to. But we think that we are definitely on the right track. In fact, we know we're on the right track in terms of the economics. All studies point to market solutions being the way to change behavior, which will help us in the fight against climate change. What we'll see, if it's a 4 cent a liter increase in gasoline, I calculated on my vehicle, that's going to cost me about $125 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'll also be seeing is the credit back from the federal government, which in my case will be somewhere around $300 a year.
Mm.
So there will be other places where pollution will be priced, like home heating. So I will have something around $200 a year with something around $200 a year credit.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're getting it every day at the pump, number one, that's going to make you think about the vehicle you're driving.
Right.
Even though you get a credit once a year from the federal government, mm-hmm. your daily credits or your daily expenses aren't as on the same reimbursement. And that's where the Conservative Party is trying to make some political mileage to say that every time you go to the pump, you can thank the federal government for all this money that you're going to be paying. On the other side, the federal government is reimbursing. And so when they call it a carbon tax, it's actually carbon pricing. Mm-hmm. It's part of an economic solution that we're trying to drive. And we're also trying to put we are putting the incentives in place for green infrastructure to reduce the amount of heating costs and the energy costs on buildings. The provincial government tried to block that as well, and we found a way to go to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities with about $1 billion, $1.02 billion to be more precise,
mm-hmm.
For communities and people to apply for green infrastructure upgrades. So we're trying to help people change behavior by incenting them to use less emitting fuel sources, and on the other hand, if you don't, you'll be paying for less emitting or for the emitting fuel sources.
Mm-hmm.
Conservatives say we're grabbing money, we're taxing, but it's all going back to the market in the form of credits or incentives, either to personal or to businesses that are also wanting to access funds.
Is your caucus sweating the court challenge? Because not coincidentally, or maybe coincidentally, Doug Ford is down the road today, talking about ramping up the heat on his end.
Yeah, no, there's a court challenge, Saskatchewan, Ontario, I believe Manitoba might be part of that as well. We're absolutely convinced that we're within our jurisdictional rights to do what we're doing, and we think that the court challenge is just trying to rally the troops on the other side to say that the federal government doesn't know what they're doing. And really what we see from the province in many, many cases now is Doug Ford's taking shots at Justin Trudeau. Mm-hmm. It isn't even conservative versus liberal. It's really a personal thing, which seems to be the way that Doug Ford goes to market is by going after personal vendettas. And so I see that personally as something that is more posturing than us doing something that's illegal that can get challenged in the courts. But of course, the judiciary are there to make those decisions, and we respect their decisions. Whatever they say, they are the judiciary, and that's their job to review things.
It's interesting you should say about making it personal, because I did want to address this too. The other day, at a fundraiser, the Prime Minister cracked a little wise with some Grassy Narrows protesters.
Yeah.
He has apologized for it, but I'm wondering, from your point of view, you're in the Liberal caucus, you're not part of this, the quote-unquote inner circle of cabinet, but Is the pressure getting to the Prime Minister a bit on this?
Well, I can't speak for the Prime Minister and what he's feeling. I know that I had a town hall in Guelph on Wednesday night, and I was asked a question in a way that my first reaction was to slough it off, and I had to suck it up and say, no, this person's asking a question. He's telling me that the previous government ran surpluses when they ran $153 billion deficits. Mm-hmm. I can say that in a different way than just sloughing it off, which is what I said was, you know, the federal Conservative Party had an artificial surplus at the end of their term by not spending money that was committed, and the money that they didn't spend was on RCMP and other essential services, on the veterans, on closing veterans offices. So the deficit will show up somewhere. It'll either show up on roads that aren't getting fixed, or it'll show up in troops that don't get the right support. So an artificial deficit on paper is one thing where we're running deficits based on investing in Canada and creating jobs and creating social benefit. So back to the Prime Minister's comments, I think it showed some frustration. In our positions, we're not allowed to be frustrated in public. We are supposed to save our frustrations for when the camera's not rolling. And so sometimes that happens. But to his credit, he stood forward and said, you know, that wasn't appropriate for me to react that way. And he apologized right away, which I think speaks a lot about the character of our Prime Minister.
You tweet a lot and discuss a lot about reconciliation.
Sure.
And there are a lot of people in the Liberal caucus who are deeply invested in this issue. And indeed, the Prime Minister ran on that issue, too. And, you know, what kind of harm does it do? Do you think that, you know, the grassy narrow situation being as difficult as it is, and, you know, it was like 2 seconds, but...
I think that in most cases... if not all cases, actions speak louder than words.
Mm-hmm.
I think the work that we've been doing on Indigenous reconciliation as well as on supporting Indigenous communities, I've been personally involved with the Boiled Water Advisories. I've seen a lot of political statements, even I got one from my brother on a text last night too, saying that more Boiled Water Advisories are coming off and more going on. Well, those are all accounted in the numbers that we report, and I gave them the website that we're open on what we're doing there. I think progressing things in Grassy Narrows, we had promised to get something in place, and it never is done fast enough.
I do want to ask one more thing about the whole SNC-Lavalin thing.
SNC what?
SNC-Lavalin.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Sorry. I've heard of that.
Speaking of backhanded comments.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm in public, aren't I? That's not frustration speaking.
Right.
No, I've been talking about that a little bit.
No, you earned it. We're sitting here today. I'm not sure if it's been released yet. I don't have my phone in front of me, but you know, we're waiting for more information to be released by the former justice minister.
Yeah.
We have new controversy about the company itself. Apparently,
sure.
You know, really was telling people in the government that, you know, jobs were at stake.
Yeah.
My question is more about procedure, though, because I find that, you know, it's been 2 months now, and speaking just as like a political observer, you know, we keep kind of living for today. I mean, the government, you know, we're going to deal with today's issues. And I think that we're just waiting for it to all come out. And I guess my question is, why can't we just have it all out?
Yeah, that was actually our question last week as well. We had a private caucus meeting, the Ontario caucus that I'm the secretary of, met with Jane Philpott last week. And what we thought was a private conversation, it did come out in public. And so that is what it is. I think we all want to know what is the end game, what's the end result, not game, because it's not a game, but what's the end result that they're trying to achieve, and how can we get past innuendos and get to actual information? And we have a number of ways as members of parliament that we're able to put our concerns on any table without fear of being sued or any kind of legal repercussions. So one of the avenues is through the committee process, and submitting a written brief to the committee is one way of doing this. Another is to just stand up in the House of Commons and say what's on your mind. And I challenged the government last year, and I challenged the Speaker on a ruling and said there was a piece of legislation from the Senate I wanted us to get onto the floor. The Speaker didn't want it. The government didn't want it. And I stood up and said, I want it. And this is why, the legal precedents. and we were able to bring it into the House. So I challenged the government myself. There's a way to do that. And then I worked with the government in terms of how that the call before you dig legislation went forward. And we were able to solve the call before you dig federally without changing legislation, but by doing something creative with provinces and territories and with the associations involved. So there's many ways to solutions, but living behind innuendos, and I've got a secret I wish I could tell you, is not the way to be open and with Canadians. Mm. So whatever comes out, we'll deal with it as it comes out, and hopefully at some point we can see past the politics of the situation. And really my concern was around legality, and really we haven't been tampering with the justice system.
Right.
Nobody is accusing anybody at this stage of any of that, which satisfies me that the process is intact. And let's talk about the budget. We've got a lot of good things for Guelph, and let's keep going because we've got limited amount of time to do a whole bunch of work, and that most of it doesn't have to do with a court case that's been going on since 2011.
And I hear you trying to pivot, but I think it's the death by a thousand cuts thing.
Yeah, of course.
The drip, drip, drip.
Of course.
And as you said, nothing illegal has been proven.
Right.
And it's just, you know, it's still the top story or one of the top three stories every day on the news.
Yeah, and it constitutes a crisis in Canada. And you look at the one in the UK and other countries, United States being another one.
All crises are not the same.
No, and the
we
death
agree
by,
about that.
The death by a thousand cuts is absolutely true, and it is a diversion. And actually, I would even say in public, as I am right now, that it's a diversionary tactic that we do have a budget to talk about, and this is more political than at this stage than substantial. So, if the opposition wants to talk about politics, they'll talk about SNC-Lavalin. They'll have us vote for 31 hours on trying to delay things going through Parliament, which is it's up to them to do. It's not up to them to block the presentation of the budget, as we saw last Tuesday. And the fact that the leader of the opposition used to be a Speaker of the House, I would have expected more from him. So that was really a bad situation that we went through. SNC-Lavalin is going through processes. There's external reviews. There's a court case going through, and it hasn't been diverted in any way. It continues to go through the court system. We've had a committee study to look at getting the testimonies from different people, and we've done that work, and it's been published in the National Post. And so I think we have done what we've needed to do to show Canadians that our institutions are intact and that democracy isn't under siege in Canada. So now we have to continue to work with that as we do, but we also have to get the budget in place, which we do every year. Coming into April, we're into the new fiscal year, and we need to approve the business plan for the country. And the business plan is not a diversionary tactic the way we're being told it is. SNC is the diversionary tactic, and the business plan for the country is what we need to get done. And we need it to pass before the end of June, before we go into the election.
I'll wrap up by asking about, and I'm going to phrase this in a particular way. I usually do end these interviews by asking you or any politician in that chair to just talk about what's going on that you don't think is getting attention. But I'm going to phrase it this way. Mm-hmm. What is concerning you these days?
The provincial government. The politics coming out of the provincial government and the spins. And the I like having good faith discussions. When people disagree, you can disagree in good faith, but when you disagree and just to try to make the other side look bad, that doesn't progress things. And I'm seeing so much coming from the province now, whether it's support of universities, and we're supporting universities by reducing the interest rates on student loans. We're doing what we can in terms of supporting education and knowledge and research. The provincial government is on a whole different agenda. Their agenda is to cut services, cut costs, and to balance a budget in a way that's harmful. And we're looking at investing in the country. And at some point, the balance may be there in terms of the growth of the economy. We've said right from the start that we would keep our debt to GDP at about the 30% level or below, which is what we're continuing to do as the economy grows. But the deficit will show up if you don't spend the money on roads or if you don't spend the money on social programs. You will be spending the money on further social programs or on car repairs or other things. And you have to continue to invest, whether it's a home or a business or a community, you have to continue to invest. You can't just cut costs and hope that everything will work out at the end of the day. You can't progress things when you're fighting. You have to find a way to common ground, and you have to do that through good faith negotiations. And we're just not seeing that. And that becomes very frustrating, because lashing out at the provincial government isn't going to be serving our community well. But we do have to point out when the provincial government is really trying to make the federal government look bad for no other reason than there's an election coming. Mm. And for that, the community suffers. And that's not what any of us are in public service, to be putting political agendas ahead of our communities.
There's an election coming?
Yeah. Do you think? So, and I'm looking forward to the thrust in Perry, and as I say, the discussions and the differences of opinion expressed in positive ways. I'm looking forward to hearing who the Greens are going to be nominating next week. I understand the Conservatives, there's a few people now expressing some interest, and haven't heard much from the NDP yet, but when we have a full slate of candidates, we'll have some good conversations about what we think the future of Canada looks like, and then the community gets to decide from there.
We'll see how that goes, but for now, we'll leave it there. Lloyd Longfield, thanks again for dropping by. We'll let you get back to hacking now.
I'm going to go hacking. Thanks, Adam. It's always great to see you.
Thank you. So that was our Lloyd tribute hour, or our Lloyd base setting hour for, you know, how, you know, things might work out for the next couple of years or however long the minority government lasts. We will see. There's still a lot of unanswered questions, and we'll try to get some answers in the weeks to come. We will be back next week with an all-new episode of the show, live and in person. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean as well, or on your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can check out GuelphPolitico.ca. Scotty can be found at Scotty Hertz on Facebook and Twitter, and he also occasionally blogs at spannerbook.wordpress.com. DJ Sounds Good to Me is going to be here at the top of the hour, as per usual, here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And as I said, we'll be back live and in person next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we will see you then.